welcome, everybody, to the Cone of Shame Veterinary Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Andy Rourke. Guys, I am here with the one and only Kelsey Beth Carpenter, formerly Vet Tech Kelsey. Always in, just I want to talk to her about a little bit of what's going on in her life. And she dropped the bomb on me at the beginning that she's not Vet Tech Kelsey anymore. And we talked about why that was. And then we talked about having one foot outside of vet medicine and what that looks like. And it was a really great conversation about how we define ourselves in medicine, how we fall deeply, passionately in love with medicine. And sometimes we can fall back out of love, and that's not bad. And honestly, for a lot of us, it is destined to happen. We are going to fall back out of love with vet medicine. That's not failure. That's just part of the process. So anyway, that's what we're talking about today, is finding that balance, identifying ourselves as someone who's a side of vet medicine, who does vet medicine, but not is vet medicine. We talk a lot about that. We talk about it from a social media sort of public figure standpoint. And then we talk about it from the practice standpoint, and just kind of how we set up our friendships and our relationships, and how we feel about the fact that sometimes we're more into our profession than other times. So anyway, that's it. That's the conversation. It is a really, really good one. Kelsey is amazing. Guys, I hope you enjoy it. Let's get into it.
This is your show. We're glad you're here. We want to help you in your veterinary career. Welcome to the Cone of Shame with Dr. Andy Rourke.
Welcome to the podcast, Kelsey Beth Carpenter, RVT. How are you?
I'm pretty darn good. How are you, Dr. Andy Rourke?
I am good. Thanks for coming on and chatting with me. I always enjoy having you on the podcast. I always enjoy our talks in general. For those who don't know you, you often go by Vet Tech Kelsey in the online world, and you have worked with me for, look, we're getting close to 10 years at this point, aren't
we? Too long.
Too long. Yeah. Yeah.
No, you know what? This side note, but I actually got rid of the Vet Tech Kelsey name recently. I went back to my name, really? And I just felt like it was like kind of, you know what? I don't want to pigeonhole myself into being all about vet medicine all the time. I just want to be Kelsey Beth Carpenter, who's also an RBT and also does other stuff, you know?
What's the process for backing out of an internet name? Like if Dr. Sue Cancer Vet wanted to give that up, like what kind of process would she have to go through? Is there paperwork?
I'm claiming that name immediately. I'm now Dr. Sue Cancer Vet. Get me up.
Kelsey Beth Carpenter Cancer Vet. Like none of that is true. Okay. So why did you make that decision? So you were like, hey, I've been Kelsey Beth Carpenter on Instagram and Facebook and like got YouTube videos and people know me. And then you just didn't want to do, are you trying to do other things? Did you feel like you were tied to vet medicine like an unhealthy way? Like what was the process for that?
I think it was just, there was a period in my life where vet medicine was my entire life, for sure. Yeah. I think everyone's gone through some period where vet meds their whole life. And yeah, Now my life has changed and there's other things going on. And I was feeling like I had pigeonholed myself into only being able to show up on social media as a vet tech. Whereas yeah, I want to be able to share other parts of my life and not feel like being a vet tech is my entire identity. It's only part of my identity. And I think like as silly as it is, the handle you use on social media does kind of represent a little bit of what you're doing. And so I was like, I'm going back to my name. Cause then I feel like I have more, I've given myself permission to be more than just a vet tech. I can be a vet tech and other things.
Yeah. It's funny how we sort of define ourselves, you know, and like how we look at ourselves. And yeah, I thought about that a lot with sort of Dr. Andy Rourke, sort of as a brand. I was at the VMX conference, this is years ago, and I was sitting there with this guy who was a mentor of mine, and he was just a guy I really respect a lot of, and he's done all the things in vet medicine. And, you know, we were there and we're at this conference and there were just people streaming by and everything. And we were sort of talking and he said, you know, Andy, I'm going to be done soon. And I was like, what does that look like? And he's like, I'm just going to go play music. I'm just going to go play music.
Yes.
And I was like, really? So it's like, are you going to come back here? And he was like, no, man, when I'm out, I'm out. And he said, all this is fake. And I said, what do you mean it's all fake? And he was like, you know, you see these conferences, you see all the hustle and bustle and everybody, you know, tells you that you're greater. Everybody tells you that your work really matters and things like that. But if you disappeared, everything would just keep rolling. And mm-hmm. so he was like, I'm going to be done and you're not going to see me anymore. I'm going to be with my family. I'm going to be with my grandkids. I'm going to play my music. And like, that's what I'm going to be. And I've never forgotten him saying, this is all fake. And it was really fascinating because I thought a lot about that because, you know, in my career, I've hustled so hard for so long to be, I hate to say that you try to be relevant, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. But there was a time, to your point earlier, when almost my entire friend group was in vet medicine.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Almost my entire friend group. And for him to be like, this is all fake. And like, they would, if you dipped out, they would have another doctor uh-huh. in a week. You know what I mean? They would. I didn't see it as cynical when he said it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Just
but I did
real.
I did kind of feel as honest. Yeah. Yeah. It was funny. I said that to someone else and she was like, well, our relationship is not fake. And I think that's very true too.
Yeah.
And so, but I do think that you can balance those things of saying, I love what I do in vet medicine and I love the relationships I have with people. And also, this would all go on without me. You know what I mean? It's not going to stop without me. And so I shouldn't stop without it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Meaning I should be able to go and do the things I want to do. So
I partially agree and partially disagree.
All right.
Only because I very much disappeared for a good while there when like I first developed my fibromyalgia and I was really sick. I like pretty much disappeared. And even now I rarely post on social media anymore. And
yeah.
yet I still have maintained numerous of my connections, people that I did not know
yeah.
before I was Vet Tech Kelsey on social media. But I think what it came down to was I like the perspective of sort of if no one knew me anymore, if everyone forgot about me, what would I want to be doing? And I think what I would want to be doing is I still would want to have one very firm foot in vet med and posting
yeah.
about vet med. But I also would want to be talking about other things as well. If no one was listening to anything I'm posting, what do I want to post? And that's what it came down to for me, I think.
I like that question of, you know, if no one else was watching, what would I want to be doing?
Exactly.
I think if you can get into that headspace and then you make the decision that I would want to do vet medicine, I think that's a really powerful thing because it's a difference in feeling like you made a choice
yeah.
versus you had no choice. You were, you know, you were stuck in the web. You were tied into what was going on.
Exactly.
I do think that that's really true. One of the things that I think freed me up a lot in my career is having a couple of friends who just left vet medicine
mm-hmm.
and then came back later on. So I had, so two people come to mind. The first one is in like the speaking stuff that I do. I always felt like I was on the hamster wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And if I stopped, you know, going to conferences or writing or doing these things, then everything would fall apart in that mm-hmm. regard. And that door would slam in my face and I would not be able to do it. And then Sean McVay, who's a practice management speaker and a really dynamic speaker, he was one of the best known speakers in practice management for years and years and years. And then he decided that he was going to only work for one company, basically at their events. And he left and he just only spoke with him
mm-hmm.
and he was gone for like 5 years. And I had numerous times I thought along the way, wow, Sean has gone off. He's doing this other thing. If he wanted to come back, would people be happy to see him? Would opportunities exist for him? And the answer was absolutely.
Yep.
Like at least as many opportunities as he had before. I think people would be like, wow, you've gone away. You've done some things, you've refreshed yourself. And now you're coming back with new ideas and perspectives and things like that, and you've chosen to do this. I think it'd be even more, you know, opportunities for him. And I don't know that if I did not see him sort of go through that and say, wow, you really can put things down and walk away and come back and they'll still be there.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would have been able to make that choice. From a practice standpoint, I had more than one friend who was a practicing veterinarian who left and went into industry, whether it was pharma or diagnostics or whatever. And they would go and they would do work in industry as a technical services vet, which is got their hands in the profession, but it's not, in the exam room seeing appointments is, right. is a different thing. But I had a couple of friends who would go and they did it for 3 or 5 years and then they decided they wanted to own their own practice and went back and fired it back up. And I just, those people, I'm so glad I had those interactions with those people because I don't know that I really believe that you could just put it down until I saw them, you know, and that was a big thing in my life.
Yeah, I don't know if all industries are that way, but that's been my experience is that vet med will always make space for me. And I think that's the case for everyone.
Hey guys, you know, probably the number one plea for help that I get from medical directors, from practice managers, from practice owners, from lead technicians, and especially lead CSRs is, hey, Andy, help me help my staff to deal with angry and complaining clients. They need ways to help these people because angry clients, complaining clients, they need help is what they need. And our people aren't empowered or they aren't trained in how to do that. And so why isn't there more training for this? Why aren't there more resources that make teams good at dealing with angry and complaining clients? Well, the number one reason really is the way that feels natural for your team, the skills that they have that they would bring into the situation, they're different in every practice. So there's not a bullet pointed, this is how you do it way, which is why I end up in this place where people are like, Andy, how do I do this? Listen, I made a course. It's called Charming the Angry Client, and it is my course meant for teams or groups to work together on all about dealing with angry and complaining clients. I use what's called the David Al model of organizational response, which is a super peer-reviewed, empirically tested way of addressing angry and complaining clients. And I break it up into pieces so that it's easy to digest. You can scatter it across a number of meetings. It is made to be watched with a couple people together. And then there's discussion questions about how do we do this in our practice? What does this look like for us? Think about a time that this happened and we saw it. How did we handle it? Ooh, I also put a bunch of example videos in there of me being an angry client. So I will just give it to you as here's Andy with his pet and he is upset. And then you can pause it and then you can talk about right there, what would we do with this? How would we handle this, guys? And it is a great low stakes way of getting your team to talk about what they would actually do. Guys, there's nothing more powerful than your team talking about what they would actually do and comparing notes. Sitting and getting lectured at is nothing close to your team, whether it's just your CSRs, whether it's 4 of your technicians working together, whether it's a whole staff meeting and a manager or an owner or a medical director leading the meeting and being the facilitator. Guys, I put a whole facilitator guide in there too. There is a whole hour long broken up into modules section on how to run an active training program using this course. And that's all laid out there and how I do it, how I work with big groups, how I work with small groups, all that information is there. Anyway, it's called Charming the Angry Client. It is on the Dr. Andy Rourke website. I'll put links directly to it in the show notes. Guys, I hope you will enjoy it. I think it's really valuable. It is honestly the most popular course I have ever put online. Grab yourself a copy. I hope you'll get a lot out of it. Let's get back to this episode.
Yeah, I don't know if all industries are that way, but that's been my experience is that vet med will always make space for me. And I think that's the case for everyone.
I think our industry is weird. I don't think people are like, if I quit waiting tables, are they ever going to let me back into Olive Garden? I don't know. You know, I get, so I'll walk that back and say other industries, I think they have like advanced training.
Yeah.
I think there's probably some truth to that. And I think it would be really hard to go to vet school and then immediately leave
because
you haven't like, you know, trained that knowledge into muscle memory. I think that would be very hard. But I suspect that other industries. I think a lot of people struggle just to get off the treadmill in general. You know what I mean? So my wife is a college professor, and she's amazing. She's absolutely amazing, and she has always wanted to work. Her career has always been important, and like I've always supported her in that regard because she's amazing. And also, especially in academia, she's gotten tenure. She's on all the things. And so, but I do think that there's definitely a piece of it
where she feels very much like she has sunk so much into this. I don't know that she feels freedom to be like, nah, I think I'm gonna take a couple years off. I don't know that those cards are open to her. I had Sarah Boston on the podcast here talking about stuff.
I loved that episode. And I cracked up out loud multiple times.
she is amazing. She left two tenure track jobs.
Yep. Incredible.
And I'm like, the guts that she has are just amazing. Like, she is inspiring to me.
Yeah. But I think that's exactly it is. It's often not the experiences I've had in vet med that make me the best technician. Like, it's my experiences outside of veterinary medicine that give me perspective that is valuable within veterinary medicine. And I think, like, Dr. Sarah Boston is like a perfect example of that. She's got all this experience outside of veterinary medicine as well. And it makes her that much more incredible of a veterinarian. I mean, too, like a lot of the stuff you talk about, you're not just reading veterinary books or veterinary articles or going and doing veterinary things. Like, a lot of the value you bring to veterinary medicine is from your experiences outside of it.
Well, thanks for saying that. But I think you're spot on too, in that, like, I mean, just think about for a second what really makes people into the people that they are. It's just like, I think things like maybe getting married, but I think experiences like having children and like that will teach you a new level of organization that I don't know otherwise. For me, improv comedy was such a massive impact on my skills and approach to the exam room. I mean, it's just, I can't explain how much I got from doing this weird hobby and bringing it back into the medical realm. But it's just the way I listen to people, the way I talk to people, the way that I look at problems and without panicking, you know, things like that. It's just, all that stuff came from telling jokes with other people on a stage. And it's hard to convince people of that sometimes, that like, I really learned this. I mean, how many of us picked up projects and learned patience from painting?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Just being like, well, I used to be so much more high strung. And I learned this, you know, or we learn to meditate, or we do yoga, and we bring this back as part of our practice and mindfulness in the practice. Yep. Again, it doesn't have to be about wellness, but really anything in the way that you organize your thoughts, the way you treat people, all that stuff comes from outside of practice. And
yep.
I think when you get into practice and you go in, you go to the same building every day, you punch the same clock every day, you talk to the same people every day, the pet owners rotate through the same rooms in front of you every day.
Yeah.
I do think it's easy to get stale. I really think that perspective, I mean, it's the same thing with international travel. You know, people go and travel to different cultures. It'll change your life. It'll change your perspective.
Absolutely.
But you'll bring that stuff back in, like, I don't know, maybe you'll look at people and their relationships with their pets a little bit differently. Maybe you'll see cultural differences a little differently than you did before. But yeah. I think that whole stepping outside of vet medicine, I think that makes a ton of sense. But yeah. I think it's wildly underrated.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest lessons I've taken in recent years was that one of the things I would do differently if I had to go back is not dive quite so deep into veterinary medicine in the beginning, because it was so exciting. We love it so much. It's so easy to just commit your entire life. When I was single, I didn't have any kids. Like, I could just commit all this time to veterinary medicine, and that's great. But it then limited how much I was growing in other ways. Could you do that though?
Like, could you? Because I fall hard. Like, when I fall, I fall hard.
Exactly.
Like, when I got into improv, I was all into improv until my wife was like, "We have children, and you need to come home. Like, you can't be at bars every night making people laugh." I was like, I get it. Like, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah, when you get into vet medicine and it's all new and it's exciting and the people are new and exciting. Like, I would never have the discipline to not fall in love with something at the beginning.
Yeah, I think
the thing that I have had to learn in my life is that you can fall in love with a thing and then slowly kind of fall back out of it, but not all the way out of it. Yeah. Like, you can, you know what I mean?
Yep.
You can be all about dance class and then just
and then just decide you're going to dance once a week, you know, and that's going to be fine. And it doesn't have to go anywhere. I think that's fine. I think a lot of us feel like if we're not as in love with the thing, or we're not as invested or involved or putting the time into the thing as we did in the past, that means that we're burning out, or that we're failing, or that we're not as committed as we used to be. I think that's just a weird way of thinking about it.
Oh, I think I think about it like a relationship. You get in a relationship, you may fall very hard, but you don't want to cut off every other part of your life, because the second you get in a fight in that relationship, you have nothing else to turn to. And that's when you hit a low spot. And so if you keep your friendships and your hobbies and all these things, your life is more diverse. If one thing goes wrong in your relationship, you still have all these other positive things. And same with vet med. You're gonna have a bad day in vet med, but if you have an improv class coming up, there's still something positive to bring you up. If you have a bad day in improv, you might have a good day in vet medicine. You know, like, just not putting all the weight there. It helped me love veterinary medicine more, I feel like.
Yeah. Oh, it's not putting all your eggs in one basket. Exactly. It's not like this thing defines me. Well, I think that's really interesting. It's interesting that you made that sort of adjustment on social media and kind of opened yourself back up that way.
Yeah.
But I do think that it's funny. There's such sort of an arms race of who is the biggest doctor of the doctors, you know what I mean? Like, yep. I'm more doctory than you are, and that's why that's why my opinion should matter more. And that's, I don't know, it's funny. I just talked to a specialist, and this person was, you know, boarded and just this incredible pedigree. And it was funny because we were literally talking about still this person feeling intimidated by people who were sort of like, I don't know, the farther along in the hierarchy, you know what I mean, of their specialty, and being like, it's intimidating to deal with them. But I'm like, you have all the degrees. And they were like, yeah, but still, you know, it's intimidating. And it's just funny that, like, we get into this race of like, I'm more into it than you are. I think that's true for any hobby. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if you my wife used to work at a scuba store, like doing scuba dive rentals and stuff. And she would talk about these people who would come in. I don't know if they actually did any scuba diving or not, but they owned all the equipment and they talked about it constantly. But it was like, I had no idea that people actually went scuba diving or not. But they would sit in the scuba store and just tell stories and talk about the latest equipment, you know? And I go, I guess I see that in vet medicine too. That makes sense.
I think one of the biggest pieces of wisdom that I've gained in my 30s has been that growing up, I wanted the biggest life I could make. I wanted to be famous. I wanted to be the best at everything. I wanted to have everything. I wanted to do everything. I wanted to, like, you know, I wanted it all. And I think in my 30s is when I realized, like, I don't want that at all. I think I thought I was supposed to want that. And now, you know, what I really want is a very small, very joy-filled, very simple life. I just want to fill my life with things that make me happy. And that means I don't have to be the best at them. Like, I can be a vet tech and be enjoying myself in whatever capacity I am a vet tech. And I don't have to be the best vet tech to, like, completely enjoy it. In some ways, we were just talking before we started recording about, you know, starting new hobbies and being bad at them. Like, in some ways, it's more enjoyable to not be the best and to stop running that race. Like, it makes life more fun and more free. And yeah, I just want a very quiet, simple, just happy life now.
Yeah, I think most of us run into that probably in our 30s. It happened for me in my 30s, right when I turned 40. That's when I slammed into it. There's this guy, he's a columnist. His name is David Brooks, and he's got a book. It's called The Second Mountain. Mm-hmm. And I really liked it. I thought it was a good idea. It's not a great book, but it's a good idea. And so basically his idea, Kelsey, is like, he says that when we're brought up, we're shown the first mountain. And this first mountain is the type of material success that you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's attention, it's wealth, it's you know, career success, it's whatever the thing is in your mind that is the big, flashy, glamorous thing that you think you need to have.
Yep.
And we all charge and start climbing this mountain. And at one point,
one of two things happens to us. We either just kind of don't get there and we're like, well, this sucks, you know, like, or you do get there. You climb to the top of that mountain or up near the top of that mountain. But in either case, regardless of who you are, at some point you realize this isn't what it's all about.
Exactly.
And like, it doesn't really matter. I wish there was a way for people to recognize that that mountain is doesn't matter without spending 30 years of their life trying to climb it. I don't know that there is. You tell people, but like, anyway, I had to burn out and just be like, this is terrible. And I'm running on this treadmill and like, it's not rewarding. And I don't know what I got for all my work.
I remember you telling a story about how one of the things that you thought you wanted or that you were supposed to want was to open your own practice.
Yeah.
And it was your wife who talked the sense into you and said, it's the middle of the afternoon and you're hanging out in the pool. You want to get rid of that? That you're not happy with that life?
I felt like I was supposed to own a business that had a big employees and had a big building around it. And yeah, I had a great thing going and all I could think of was like, yeah, but this isn't the mountain that I had decided was so great. So anyway, in the book, he says the second mountain is interconnectivity.
Yeah.
It's after you try to climb the first mountain, you realize that what really matters is how you're connected to other people and the relationships that you have. So anyway, I've always, it's stuck with me forever, but I really like that a lot. But well, Kelsey, I really appreciate you being here. Thanks for talking through with me about, you know, getting out of vet medicine and what it means to be in vet medicine versus what it means to be a person, like, I don't know, touching vet medicine, adjacent to vet medicine.
Yeah. Doing the wave into vet medicine.
Doing
and one then, arm and then, in, and then waving
and then it
out.
Comes back. Yeah, it comes back the other way. That's it. All right. Thanks for being here, Kelsey. Thanks for listening, everybody. Take care of yourselves. And that's what I got for you guys. That's the episode. Thanks so much to Kelsey Beth Carpenter for being here. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, leave us an honest review wherever you get your podcast, or send it to a friend. Help us get people to know the podcast exists. That's all I'm asking. So anyway, gang, take care of yourselves. Talk to you later. Bye.